97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Wednesday afternoon visit with Brian Kilmeade coming up after the top of the hour at 5:07. Also, Chris Klemm, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol chief, will talk about some things that happened at the debate last night and those ICE numbers showing thousands, if not hundreds or tens of thousands at the very least, of convicted murderers and rapists who illegally crossed the border that are still running free in this country. But let's go to New York City. That's where Paul Morrow is, Fox News contributor, retired NYPD inspector. He's an attorney and the founder of a great website called theopsdesk.org. We're going to talk about Eric Adams. How are you, Paul, this afternoon?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
Good. Doesn't it seem like, because so much is changing, right? We might be on the cusp of World War III. It seems like this Eric Adams thing took place like months ago, not just a week ago, because we move on so quickly. But this is a pretty big story, and you have been alluding to these, you know, indictments and charges coming for a while now when we've had these conversations. So after digesting a little bit of what happened last week, where are we with Eric Adams?
So I think that the New York City mayor is only at the beginning of his travails. There has been a lot of federal activity, legal process related to search warrants, subpoenas, people's houses being searched, documents, records being seized. Southern District of New York does not do all of that to show. So I think that there are going to be numerous other indictments. As of now, his police commissioner has stepped down. His school chancellor has stepped down. One of his closest advisors has stepped down. The city's top lawyer has stepped down because she says he wouldn't listen to her. That's the reporting. So it looks like the entire Adams administration really is across the board under federal investigation, and I expect more indictments to come.
So, you know, and I said this last week, Paul, you know, with anything that the feds are doing right now, let's face it, some of us have cast, you know, aspersion on the prosecutions of President Trump and some of these other things that have gone on. So on the one hand, I think I have to take a step back and say, OK, what's going on here with the federal prosecutors? On the other hand, it does not look good for Eric Adams, and the feds usually got you, don't they?
They do. I mean, the conviction rate for Southern District, last I heard, was well over 90%. They don't bring cases that they're going to lose. If you include plea bargains, it's like north of 95%. So that being the case, these two things that you mentioned are not necessarily mutually exclusive. Could the Biden administration have decided to move on Eric Adams because he was being fairly vocal about the depredations of the southern border on New York City? Yes. But that doesn't mean that he is clean as the driven snow here. And I think that once they decided they were going to move on him, not only did they start finding all kinds of other stuff, but they felt like, okay, we are entirely justified in bringing an indictment because they see so much fire under the smoke. But I will say that it's a strange indictment. They didn't bring the most obvious charge that would have justified this thing, which is the FARA charge, the foreign agent charge relative to Turkey. Instead, they brought it as a bribery charge. And so that maybe undercuts what I just said. It's a little amorphous. We're going to have to see where it all goes.
So, you know, you kind of focused when you wrote about this, about the campaign finance violations. And his attorney comes out and says, look, this is small potatoes. The prosecutor, the U.S. attorney, basically tries to wind in the $10 million in matching funds to, you know, highlight or outline that this is much more serious than some small potatoes with campaign finance. So what on that front, that's where you think the more serious charge is, right?
I do, because there is a vulnerability built into the bribery charge. Like I said, they didn't go with the FARA charge, and the bribery charge opens up the door to the McDonnell case, which was a famous case regarding the governor of Virginia, where the tit for tat wasn't really clear, the quid pro quo. There has to be a tight nexus between both sides of the ledger in terms in a bribery case, and in that case, it wasn't there, and the McDonnell case got thrown out. So the bribery charges, the Adams team is hoping to get dismissed based on that. And they have a shot. But the campaign finance stuff is where the real action is. The $10 million in matching funds, if they can show that he actually directed all of this illegal bundling, then he's got real problems. And remember something. There's been a couple of moves here that really speak of, you know, a cognizance of guilt. They come to take his phones. They take his phone and his tablet, but he leaves his personal phone home conveniently. And when they ask him to deliver it, the next day he shows up and says, I changed the password. I made it a 6-number password, and just to make sure that nobody on my staff accidentally erased anything. That's the story he gave. It's right in the indictment. And then he handed the phone over, and they said, okay, what's the password? He said, oh, I just changed it. I don't remember now. That's not going to go over well with the feds. If anything, it's going to incentivize them more to get into that phone. It's going to be very difficult with a 6-number password, but that shows that there is something there to hide. I think it's likely relative to the campaign finance, and I think that's where his real trouble resides as of now.
So you're telling this is interesting to me because I think this is undercovered, if not covered at all. So you're saying that he's got his phone, he hands it over, but he says, look, I don't remember the password, and they still have the phone. They can't get into it at this point?
Yeah, that goes back a number of years. If you remember the San Bernardino case, the terrorism case with the FBI, they wanted to get into the terrorist's phone. He dropped it at the scene. And they couldn't get in, so they asked Apple to help. And
I do remember
that.
Yeah.
Apple said, yeah, well, they said, look, we don't care if you have a warrant. You know, we can't undercut our entire business process here, and that'll open up doors to hackers. I don't believe a lot of that. I think it's all posturing. They just don't want to have a whole legal compliance wing, which costs them money.
Yeah.
And they also
yeah.
want the marketing to be able to say, hey, nobody can get into our phones. And so Apple and Google, using, you know, the Android phones, Apple and Google have set up a circumstance where realistically the entire American judiciary is out of the process because they've set up an algorithm. They've set up an encrypted operating system that they themselves are incapable of breaking without taking extraordinary means, really rewriting their source code. And so they've obviated any judge in the country because even if you have you can have a warrant from the Supreme Court, wherever, you're not getting in because they're going to say we just can't do it.
Paul Morrow is back with us this afternoon. You know, I do this political roundtable with Paul every Friday. It's we like to consider it one of the prime pieces of real estate on the show. It's been very popular for years, and I have, you know, two people on the left and then myself and someone on the right. We have this very unusual record of, and I'm not even making this up, five people who have appeared in the last 15 years on my roundtable have gone to federal prison. They've all been politicians, as you might imagine. Two of them recently just got out of federal prison. But I mention that because in all those cases, somebody wore a wire. And in this case, it's hard for me to believe that somebody wasn't wearing a wire.
Well, first of all, let me just say I'm glad I've never been on that show because
yes,
it's not
exactly
a great track record. But that said, yeah, you're 100% right. This reeks of a wire because of how expansive the case has become. Looks to me like they got up on a wire. And that goes to the point I was making earlier where two things can be true. You know, they may have hit the door of his campaign finance advisor the day that he was in D.C. to meet with the White House regarding the border. That is, Eric Adams was down there. They may have been sending a message with that, but they also may have been looking to tickle the wire, as the saying goes, which is, okay, we're going to hit the door of this 25-year-old woman who's never had a job other than working for Eric Adams. So that whole thing reeks of being fugazi as well. But, you know, you do that so that she jumps on the phone and starts screaming and other people start jumping on the phone and saying inculpatory things because they don't realize that they're being listened to. The other thing that I think is a real possibility here is there's a woman called Adam Staffer in the indictment. And with a little digging, you can see who she is. And she's not named, but you can find it on the Internet. Very good chance that they got onto her early, grabbed her, put some leverage on her, flipped her, and wired her up. She may have been wearing a body wire for a lot of this.
Wow.
Now, the Adams team is not going to know this, but he may have been meeting with her, on the phone with her, directing her to do things. And she may have been recording everything he did. And if that's the case, it's going to be pretty tough for him to talk his way out of this.
Look, they all say they're not going anywhere. He's being defiant, you know, but then they go somewhere. We had a governor here. Governor Greitens wasn't going to go anywhere. He went somewhere. You got Joe Biden. He wasn't going to go anywhere unless it was an act of God. He went somewhere. So even at AOC, now some of these progressives might not like Adams because he backed off on some of their agenda. But do you think he lasts this before this all goes to court?
You know, I really don't know because we don't know what they have. I was inclined to think that he could fight it out and last. He's saying he wants a fast trial and he's just banking, I'm sure, on just getting one person in a 12-person jury who will hang the jury and then he can get reelected, et cetera. But I feel the tide turning here. The more that comes out, the more his people around him resign. You know, you're really starting to hear some troubling things. And I actually do think that Hochul, May, the governor of New York, may move on him. It's her prerogative. She has the power to remove him. And currently the story goes that she's told him, and I don't know, this is rumored, but the story goes that she has given him a few days. She said, I'll give you some time to think about what you want to do. Supposedly, if he cleans up his people, he gets rid of some people who are around him who may have some vulnerabilities, she might be willing to tolerate him for a while. But I think that's very thin ice. She has constituents as well. She wants the last politically. And I think that sometime over the next months, as the shoes continue to drop, I think you very well could see her force him out.
Paul, I know you wrote about, this is another topic that really deserves an entire segment, last week with the Secret Service report that came out. Josh Hawley, our senator here, has been also exposing some things kind of on a parallel path with whistleblowers. But wow, that doesn't look good for the Secret Service. And there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered there, wouldn't you think?
I think the real thing right now is that, you know, to enlarge and enhance the story, that we don't have an executive. I mean, this should be told to us that Acting Director Roe is going to hit this new paradigm, the paradigm shift. He's going to change the service, et cetera. That should be coming from above him. Why should we believe him? He was the number two there, and Cheadle looks to have been completely a figurehead. So why should we take the guy who was there? Why should we take his word for it that he's going to fix it? Why didn't you fix it when you could have? We should be hearing from above him that he's the guy, and I'm skeptical that he is the guy. And we should be hearing from either Mayorkas, the vice president, or the president. Those are the three people that are above him in the chain of command and the executive. Mayorkas seems to be hiding under his desk after dropping every ball that's been handed to him.
He really is.
Kamala
yeah.
Harris is, you know, obviously just about campaigning right now and trying to rewrite her history. And our president, God bless him, you know, is still asleep. And unfortunately, you know, he's in severe decline, and nobody seems to want to admit it on his side of the fence. So we really have nobody who's controlling all of this. And I think the real story is this is what happens when you don't have a functioning executive. You get things like the Secretary of Defense going MIA for 10 days in the middle of two international wars that embroil us, Lloyd Austin. You have things like our Shambolic pullout from Afghanistan. You have a border that seems to have disappeared. You have a Secret Service that's utterly rudderless and seems incapable of fixing itself to the point that we get a second assassination attempt on Donald Trump. All of this goes to not even poor leadership, lack of leadership. There's a vacuum, and it's not being filled.
You nailed it, Paul Morrow. You often do. Thank you so much for everything this afternoon. You have a great week.
Get more at 971talk.com.